Bill Buckmaster with you along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, the weather looks like, kind of a repeat of September with temperatures pushing almost 100 degrees next week.
You had to bring that up.
I did because, it's enough already. The Buckmaster Show on Thursday, October the 12th, 2023. Green Things Zocalo Village sponsors our studio during the noon hour on the Buckmaster Show. We're on 1030 KVOI Tucson Source for trusted local news and talk. Worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, where we piggyback the live feed from kvoi.com. For our live line, those are our telephone interviews. That is sponsored by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. The leadoff interview today, Rex Scott, Pima County Supervisor, Democrat District 1. Joining us on the live line, I believe, from Flagstaff, Arizona. Supervisor Scott, how are you?
Bill, I'm doing really well. And yes, I am calling you from Flagstaff. I am attending the annual Legislative Policy Summit for the state's County Supervisors Association.
And you are the representative for Pima County on that association. And what's the piece of business that seems to be at the top of the agenda, Supervisor Scott?
Well, actually, every county supervisor in the state is a member of the County Supervisors Association. But I'm the county's representative to what's known as the Legislative Policy Committee. And that's a supervisor from each one of the 15 counties. We meet when the legislature is in session to talk about bills that are going through the legislature that are in the interest of counties. And we talk about whether we're going to oppose, support, or remain neutral on those bills. But every year, the entire County Supervisors Association gets together at a different county. It's always in October, and it is designed to put together our legislative program for the coming year. And, issues that we want the legislature and the governor to focus on as we're moving into a new legislative session that will begin in January.
You have held three of five scheduled town hall meetings this fall, Supervisor Scott. You've got another one coming up October 19th. And for folks that were planning to attend, they might note there has been a change in venue.
Yeah, that's correct, Bill. We were going to have it at Brandy Fenton Park, but there is some construction going on there that is not to upgrade the facility, that's not going to be finished in time for us to conduct our town hall there. So we are moving it to the grounds of Tucson Medical Center.
Yeah, that will be in the Marshall Conference Center at TMC, getting underway at 6 o'clock. It will be a 90-minute session, and then there'll be another session to close out your schedule of town halls at Pima Community College, the Northwest Campus, on North Shannon. Again, the time will be 6 to 7:30. One thing that's been coming up, I understand, at these meetings is the new compensation for the compensation schedule for Pima County employees. You're very happy with that, I take it.
I am, and so was the majority of the board. We contracted with a consultant to look at the system for classifying and compensating employees at the county level. And the main reasons we were doing that is because we want the county to be an employer of choice so that we can have a low vacancy rate, a low turnover rate, so that we have employees who want to stick with the county throughout their careers. The ultimate beneficiaries of having a workforce that feels supported and encouraged and well compensated, the ultimate beneficiaries are going to be our constituents because those employees are responsible for providing services and supports to them. And the last time the classification and compensation system overall was examined by the county was back in the late 1950s. So it was definitely time for a comprehensive review. We worked with a consultant on that, consultant that we contracted with back in 2021, and we've been putting the first two phases of their recommendations in place and have been getting good feedback from our employees as to the results.
We had a listener who wanted to ask you about the compensation package. The listener is concerned that most of us, as he refers to it, most of us in the private sector do not have anywhere near the kind of benefit package that Pima County employees have. Would you care to comment at all on that?
Sure, I would, because the consultant that we worked with looked at our main competitors for county positions, not just in the public sector, but in the private sector. And what we are looking at in terms of compensation and classification doesn't deal as much with benefits as it does with salaries and what those entry level salaries are and how people move along a salary schedule. I think one thing that the listener might be referring to is the fact that public employees are part of, as a matter of state law, are part of the state retirement system. But in terms of benefits, we're just looking at being benefits and salary. We're looking at being competitive with other employees in both the private and public sector who are likely going to be competing with the county for people we need for our positions.
I think the listener was concerned about the 12% pension match.
Well, again, that is a matter of state law for public employees. Because our employees are part of the Arizona State Retirement System, so that's a matter of the county conforming with what's required by the state.
At the I believe this was the most recent Pima County Supervisors meeting. Maybe it was the meeting before last. The issue about the Sheriff's Department and the sexual assault case and how that should be reviewed. You were the lone vote against seeking an outside investigation into how Pima County Sheriff Chris Nanos conducted an internal review of his agency's handling and of alleged sexual assault of a deputy by a colleague. Why did you vote no on that?
Well, the reason there were two votes that the board took, one of them at our last meeting, and that was to release a attorney-client privileged document that we had gotten from the county attorney on that was opining on what we had voted on at the last meeting, which was calling on a couple of state entities to investigate in how the sheriff was handling internal matters related to this former sheriff sergeant who had been fired and is currently facing civil and criminal charges. And in the first instance, I was one of two supervisors who voted no. In the second instance, you're right, I was the only supervisor who voted no. And the reason I did in both instances, Bill, is that based on what I heard when we were getting advice from our attorneys, I really felt that the board taking any action at this point could have an effect on the criminal case and the civil case that are pending against this sergeant, former sergeant. And I really didn't want the board to do anything that might have a deleterious impact on justice being served in either of these two cases. So that was why I voted no.
All right, we're going to pause right here. We'll have more with Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott, Democrat, on the five-member supervisorial board. He represents District Number 1, which covers the foothills area, the northwest part of the Tucson Valley. He is my supervisor because I live in District 1. Want to talk a little bit about a business, Rex Scott, that you know we love up in your area, up in District 1. That's Mona's Danish Bakery.
We love them indeed.
Conveniently located, certainly in the district, at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. They are open right now for lunch. We talk so much about the breakfast because they are, of course, home of the Danish Kringle. The lunch is great, too, so might want to stop by if you're anywhere in the area there at Swan and Sunrise. Stop by, say hello to Steve and the bakery team at Mona's Danish Bakery. Their website's monasdanishbakery.com. We'll pause right now. Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott is on our live line, which is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. It's the Buckmaster Show on a Thursday afternoon. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer, and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan to the RTA board by December. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. Coming up tomorrow on our Friday Focus interview, we will have Laura Conover, the Pima County attorney. She'll be our Friday Focus guest. My co-guest news media personality with me will be Dylan Smith, the publisher and founder of TucsonSentinel.com. But that's coming up tomorrow on our Friday edition of the Buckmaster Show. Our Liveline interviews are presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. On the Liveline, Rex Scott calling in on the Liveline from Flagstaff, Pima County Supervisor, Democrat representing District 1. He's up at the County Supervisors Association meeting in Flagstaff. And did caller Matt went away, or is he still with us? He went away because his question was about the kind of the Pima County perspective to the Israeli situation, which we're going to be covering the Israeli situation and the Ukraine with General Jeffrey Buchanan coming up after the 12:30 break. But do you have any thoughts about that, Supervisor Scott?
I would echo what we heard from the president right after those horrible events in Israel perpetrated by a terrorist group, which is that the United States, and I believe all Americans, stands 100% behind Israel.
Coming up now in less than 2 months is one of the firm deadlines. There's now about half a dozen deadlines for the Regional Transportation Authority, the program that's known as the RTA Next, as the current 20-year voter approval regional transportation plan gets ready to sunset here in a couple of years. I'm talking about the December 6th deadline for the RTA Next draft plan. Will that deadline be met, in your opinion, Supervisor Scott?
Oh, I absolutely believe it will be met. It has to be met, Bill, because we gave not only a strong deadline to the Citizens Advisory Committee that is working on putting together that draft plan, but we also put up some parameters for them in terms of the constraints that they need to be mindful of as they're putting together that draft. They need to get that to us in time so that we can begin not only our own review of their draft, but more significantly, the public comment period that we need to have throughout the course of 2024 so that we can make any changes to the draft plan before we put it before the voters in the spring of 2025. So, yes, it's imperative that they meet that deadline, and we set that for them some time ago, and we know that they are working actively to meet it, and they're working in partnership with the Technical Management Committee, which is the group of jurisdictional transportation professionals who are helping to advise the Citizens Advisory Committee.
Let's talk a little bit about this plan as we know it. This is what is being prepared is a program that will be $2.34 billion, 20-year. It will be the draft plan for the RTA board to review by early December. Can you give us some general hints about the direction that this plan is going, Supervisor Scott? And of course, you're very close to what is going on because you do represent on the 9-member RTA regional board. You are the representative of Pima County, of Pima County supervisors.
I am, and I wanted to point out that the deadline and all the parameters that we set for the Citizens Advisory Committee were set by a unanimous vote of the 9-member board. And what they are spending a lot of time on their deliberations is dealing with the new cost estimates for the roadway projects that have been submitted by the various jurisdictions. The costs, both material and labor costs for transportation projects, have just skyrocketed since the end of the pandemic. Inflationary pressures and shortages, you name it. So a significant number of costs that they need to take into account. They're also looking at the other elements and sub-elements related to transit and safety, pedestrian and walkability concerns, bicycling. So they're looking at not just those roadway projects, but all of those other elements that constitute a comprehensive plan, just like the 2006 plan addressed not just roadway projects. RTA Next will also address more than roadway projects as well.
Is it safe to say that there needs to be some kind of a consensus about those that want more public transit versus those that want more road work?
Bill, there has to be consensus on everything. What the nine-member RTA board is looking for, and I feel I can speak for all my colleagues when I say this, is a strong vote by a significant majority of the Citizens Advisory Committee for the draft plan that is sent to us. And there needs to be consensus on everything that they're considering, certainly including the balance between transit and roadway projects. But there needs to be consensus on everything, because that's going to make the likelihood of consensus on the RTA board greater, and it's also going to make the likelihood of consensus throughout our community much greater. We want everybody in Pima County, regardless of where they live or work, to look at the RTA Next plan and see many reasons why they should vote in favor of it. And so that makes the kind of consensual decision-making that you're referring to on the Citizens Advisory Committee just absolutely vital.
One thing that we should point out, and we probably don't talk about it enough, that in the budget that was approved in midsummer or the end of June, that Pima County has pledged to repair more than 100 miles of roads in the next 12 months. Is that correct?
It is, Bill. This is the continuation of a repair and maintenance plan that was begun by the previous Board of Supervisors in 2019 and will continue through the rest of this decade. And the previous board in the last fiscal year that they were responsible for put some additional funds into that program. Our board did the same thing in the first two fiscal years we were responsible for. And what the public is going to notice is that because we really front-loaded repair due to the fact that our partners in the road building industry were able to take that on, and also because of interest rates being lower at during those three fiscal years, because we front-loaded repair during those times, they're going to see a lot more funds devoted towards maintenance in the latter part of the program, because it makes no sense to repair a road and get it back into good condition and then have it fall back into poor condition because you're not keeping up with maintenance. So it's important for the public to know that it is not just a repair program, but that it is also puts a great deal of emphasis and resources into maintenance.
Boy, what a perfect time of year to be up in Flagstaff. I often think back to my own childhood growing up on the North Shore of Chicago. My favorite weekend of the year was always mid-October. That's when the leaves were turning, and back in the day, we used to rake the leaves and then burn them in the street. And of course, they don't do that anymore, I'm sure. But there was this smell of autumn leaves in the air. And I'm thinking about up in Flagstaff, I don't know if there's a smell of autumn leaves, but there's certainly the color is starting to change up there for sure.
The trees absolutely are. I am looking out the window right now, and there are aspen and other trees, orange, yellow, brown, you name it. It really is a gorgeous sight. And like you, I grew up in an area where you got used to fall color back in Ohio. So it is a nice reminder of my youth when I come up here to Northern Arizona.
Your youth in Athens, Ohio, correct?
That is correct. Yes, sir.
All right. Rex Scott, always a pleasure, and we will catch up with you certainly during down the road here very soon. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir, Bill. You take good care, and we'll see you Saturday for Anne's celebration of life.
Yes, and thank you, actually, for bringing that up, and I've been very public about that event. It is at 10 a.m. at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church. I put it out on Facebook, and it's not only just for our immediate family and the friends, people who know me through broadcasting, but it really is kind of a community event. We're calling it a celebration of life. For those that don't know, St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church is a very historic church, beautiful church. It's at the corner of River and Campbell. We'll get underway about 10. There'll be a reception right afterwards, and everybody is invited to come out and say hello and lend some support and maybe begin opening the door for me to have some closure of this really horrific thing that's happened as Anne died actually 8 weeks ago today. So we'll hope to see a lot of people out there on Saturday. We'll take a break right here, back right after this.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, and our studio is sponsored by Green Things and their sister business, Zocalo Village, which is on site. It's a beautiful 13-acre site over by the Brandy Fenton Park on River Road, right by the Rito. 13-acre site has everything you need for the garden, and it's about time to put some color in the garden after a very difficult summer. When you're there, check out Zocalo Village and the pottery there, the Talavera pottery from Mexico. Really nice. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com, two websites. They're in their 53rd year of business. They're open daily. Our live line for our telephone interview is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. It's my pleasure to welcome back to the show Lieutenant General Jeffrey Buchanan. General Buchanan retired after nearly 40 years in the United States Army. He retired in 2019. In addition to commanding the 6,000 troops of the southwest border, he led the military operation in Puerto Rico after Hurricane Maria. He had four tours in Iraq and one in Afghanistan. He's a graduate of the University of Arizona, and it's ROTC program. The general advises Homeland Security. He's a commissioner for Arizona Game and Fish. He's an advisor for the Vet Voice Foundation. And in addition, if he didn't need enough on his resume, he's a volunteer deputy sheriff in Pima County. And, excuse me, Cochise County, where he is a resident. He resides with his wife on a small ranch outside beautiful Patagonia, about 13 miles from the Mexico border. Great to see you, General Buchanan.
Thanks, Bill. It's my honor to join you, as always.
Well, the last time you were on the show, I was not here. I think my friend Ben Bueller Garcia was hosting that show, and the reason I was not here, that I believe that was the day that Ann died, which was like 8 weeks ago today, and it's been, as you can imagine, I mean, you're a soldier. You know about death. You know about dealing with grief, and the grief, everybody's going to handle grief, and maybe you'll agree with this, maybe you won't, but in a different manner. It's a roller coaster. Some of your thoughts.
Well, first of all, I want to pass on my heartfelt feelings for Ann's passing. And I think this actually gives us an opportunity. Nobody should go through grief alone. And that's, I think, when it is hard. I learned this a long time ago. As a soldier, as a leader of those killed in combat, you know, if we had a platoon lose two or three guys in a single incident, that was where I was going to go. And I was going to go spend time with those guys. And you know, it's uncomfortable because you don't know what to say. And you can't say anything, but you can do something. And do something is just being there for them. You know, I'm struck by... I think you don't have to command soldiers in combat, but we all experience loss. And the loss doesn't have to be death. It could be, you know, a friend is getting divorced or something. But sometimes we avoid those situations because we don't know what to say. And that's a tremendous loss, and it causes even more pain if we avoid them. I think the best response is to go and be there for your loved ones, be there for your friends. And even if you don't know what to say, that's actually the perfect thing to say is, I don't know what to say that I could possibly bring you any comfort, but please know that I'm here for you.
Yeah, and that's what I'm really looking forward to Saturday in this celebration of life up at St. Philip's at 10 a.m. There'll be people that I'm sure will be uncomfortable when, you know, just, you know, give me a hug, and just your presence, the person's presence there. Sometimes there are no words, but just them being there is going to be important.
Yes, sir. I think this is, you know, I do stay involved in the leader development realm. And this is one thing I try to pass on to leaders. So you're going to have your employees or your subordinates and, you know, experience loss. The most important thing you can do that day is go be there for them, be there with them, and just support them. And, you know, that care will have a huge impact on their ability to deal with the pain.
Yeah, and then of course you had the soldiers that you lost, but then there's the whole issue of the grief back home.
There sure is, and you know, I would be lying to you if I said that this doesn't affect me today. It still does. I think about the troops I've lost. In fact, like we were talking before went on air, I wear a bracelet.
Yes.
For Lieutenant Colonel Todd Clark, who he and I served together three different tours in Iraq, and he was killed by an insider attack on his second tour in Afghanistan. And it helps. I wear this bracelet every day. His wife, in fact, gave it to me. And for me, it's a reminder that freedom is not free. There is a cost to doing this. And I think about those we've lost, but I also want to honor their memory and all the difference that they did actually make.
All right. We have a situation now where we have two very dangerous situations going on. Of course, we have the Ukraine situation, but now this surprise attack, and some have compared it to kind of Israel's 9/11, or others have said, you know, it's not so much 9/11, it's actually like a Pearl Harbor kind of situation for Israel. What are some of your thoughts now on the war in the Holy Land?
Well, first of all, I do recognize the tremendous cost in human life, both in the Palestinian side and the Israeli side. And it's unfortunate that there are so many innocent civilians, non-combatants, caught up in this. You know, the Gaza Strip has been effectively or maybe ineffectively governed by Hamas for a number of years. Hamas, make no mistake about it, is a terrorist organization, and they use terrorist tactics. They, as we've seen recent evidence of capture, kill, torture people, all kinds of things. And they're, you know, a very bad group of people. But the majority of people in the Gaza Strip, of course, are not members of Hamas, but they happen to be caught at the wrong place at the wrong time with nowhere to go.
A lot of young people. 2 million people living in an area about half the size of New York City, very just densely populated.
Yeah. And they're caught in the midst of this by an act that was, make no doubt about it, was started by Hamas, much as, you know, no matter who wants to color things that are going on in Ukraine, same sort of thing. This was started completely by Russia. Well, the situation in Israel and the Gaza Strip was started completely by Hamas, and innocent people have been and are going to continue to suffer.
Who planned this attack?
Did
Hamas have the leadership, the inner workings to plan something sophisticated like this, or would it have to have come from another player in the region?
No, I think they've got, pure speculation on my part. Let me just say this is not based on any current read of intelligence or anything like that. I think Hamas does have that sophistication to be able to do this, to create an incident. I'm not sure that it's going to end the way they intended. Of course, we don't know exactly how it's going to end right now, but the fact that, you know, they stormed Israel from a number of different directions using different medium all at once with the intent of capturing innocents and killing them, I think that was certainly within their bailiwick. Was there an involvement by somebody else? I don't know. There is a long relationship between Hamas and Iran, but the things I'm reading on open source make it, I think we don't have any evidence that Iran was engaged directly in any of the planning or execution of this. It is a strange relationship. Unlike Iran and Hezbollah, you know, based out of Lebanon,
yeah,
that has a strong religious tie. Of course, Hamas is based on the Sunni side of Islam.
Mm-hmm.
And so one would think that there's not a lot of overlap in interests. But one would have thought the same thing between Iran and the Taliban, who was also very Sunni-based.
Yeah.
And there was a strong relationship there. It's a tough situation, though.
You know, Nicholas Kristof, writing on the editorial page, says that dismantling terrorist organizations can be harder than it looks. And he points out that, you know, the Taliban also deserved elimination. Yet in the end, it was the United States that was eliminated from Afghanistan. So I think what he's talking about is at 9/11, the way the United States decided to handle it was focusing on Afghanistan. And now Israel obviously will be focusing on Gaza. It's going to be interesting the way it plays out, because just conducting an operation in this kind of densely populated area, when Hamas uses mosques, hospitals, schools as military operation centers.
Sure, and they also routinely use civilians as human shields.
Yes.
And so, you know, the dilemma, or one of the dilemmas that the Israeli Defense Forces faces, is they want to attack Hamas. They also, I know, are working very hard to protect noncombatants, but that's not going to keep them from doing their job. And so you got this wicked problem with, by trying to destroy the terrorists, potentially you're creating more terrorists and more support for Hamas. You mentioned the youth bulge. You know, I think the median age in Gaza is 18.
Yeah, half the population is under 18.
This is one of those things. There was a saying with respect to Afghanistan, at least in some quarters, and I think it applies here, you can't kill your way out of this problem. And it's obviously what's going on in the Gaza Strip with Hamas is very different than the situation in the West Bank under the leadership of the Palestinian Authority. It is actually pushing for a two-state solution, recognizes Israel's right to exist, unlike Hamas that does not.
All right, we're past the break, but caller Matt would like to ask a question of General Buchanan. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, General Buchanan, beyond the geopolitical reality that's facing the U.S., and the moving of carrier groups into the Mediterranean for all sorts of reasons. Here at home, if you were to be advising local officials regarding homeland security, from the governor down to county and city officials, how would you discuss how they should posture themselves and think about their citizenry and soft targets? Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, Matthew. I think that first of all, any opportunity that we have interagency within state, local, federal authorities to share intelligence about or concerns about threats are things that we should leverage and take advantage of. And no single agency should be too proud or too insular to not accept tips or a read of the situation. You know, the federal government can learn some specifics about what's happening through the eyes of a local sheriff. They, you know, this is their terrain, and they will see things and see things developing. And likewise, that local sheriff would be wise to listen to the intelligence from the federal government, who may have assets that are, you know, collecting information around the world, but may have an impact here inside of Arizona. So I think the first most important thing is to share information, to be open to that, and try to learn from other people who should be working together in this space.
All right, we're going to take a break right here. More with General Buchanan right after this break.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is collected throughout Pima County and averages more than $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary. Home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Nice day over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. 69 degrees at midday. This is a perfect time of year to take about a three-hour drive east of Tucson. One of our great sponsors, Silver City in Grant County, they would love to have you come over. Lots to do, hiking activities, just kind of hanging out in a really neat town, Silver City, a lot of Victorian architecture. Their website, southwestnewmexico.org. Before you take the trip, check out the website. I think you'll be impressed. Lots to do in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. We continue now with Lieutenant General Jeffrey Buchanan, who I am pleased to say is now a regular guest here on the Buckmaster Show. He had nearly 40-year career in the United States Army, the career ending in 2019 in the Army, but he's moved on to do a ton of other things, including being a commissioner on the Arizona Game and Fish Department. General, I wanted to ask you a little bit about, we've all seen the pictures of a very rare cat, a jaguar, that comes up in your neck of the woods. Are these kind of lone wolves, or what's going on?
I think so. If you look at the behavior of large cats throughout North America, and really we're talking mountain lions and jaguars, although I think ocelots are the same way. You know, we've had reports of ocelots in the Huachucas as well. The behavior is that once the young cats are reared by a mother in a litter, the males will go out and get away from one male's territory and try to reestablish their own. That's why if you look at the population of mountain lions in the United States over the last 30, 40 years, it's actually expanded. Part of this is driven by the behavior of males who are looking for new territory. Now, in the past 20 or so years, most of the jaguar sightings in the United States, which have really been southeastern Arizona, the Chiricahuas, the Huachucas, the Santa Ritas, et cetera, have been lone males. And they are, you know, behaving in accordance with large cat behavior, looking for new territory. That doesn't mean we have a existing population here, but I think that a real indication of that would be if we start seeing females and females come north of the border, that would be reestablishing actual breeding populations, which is not what we have evidence of right now.
Yeah, because mountain lion behavior now has really gotten into the urban areas. In Griffith Park in Los Angeles, they had a mountain lion that was living there. So they're expanding and they're becoming city lions.
Yeah, and of course, we've had some instances lately in our state where the Game and Fish Department did have to get involved in management because of mountain lions in urban areas. And they can be, you know, Certainly they have a right to exist and everything, but these are, make no mistake about it, these are dangerous predators. And if what we get worried about is if they get habituated to human existence and start
eating garbage and stuff.
Well,
right?
In the case of mountain lions, eating cats and dogs and like this.
Oh,
and
boy.
That can cause problems.
How do we have a happy medium on the border wall and let our cats find a way to come in?
Well, as you know, the border wall is not complete, and no wall is going to stop human movement by itself. No wall is going to keep people from going over top, under, through it. What it takes, if you really want to use that as a barrier, is you have the barrier itself, but you also have to have surveillance on it and ability to react to it. And, you know, I'll just give you one example from my experience in 2018-19. We had a 30-foot tall wall in Nogales, and on top of that wall, we put 9 rows of concertina or razor wire.
Oh, my goodness.
And in 1 2-week period, in a 1.5-mile section of wall, we had more than 150 breaches of that wall.
Oh, my goodness.
So that's not going to stop people, but what you hope is that it slows them down enough, if you're watching it, so that you can react. So this leads me back to your question.
Yeah.
I think if we're smart, we can build a wall that slows down people, but leave corridors open for wildlife where we know they're going to want to traffic. But at the same time, rather than just leaving them open, I would mass surveillance on that place.
Mm.
And then, you know, essentially you have what in the military we might call a baited ambush. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the cats can go back and forth, mm-hmm. but if people come through, we're already watching it and ready to respond.
Yeah, that's a great idea, because then the word will get out among, you know, the coyotes and the crossers that is so heavily, surveilled that we'll leave it alone.
Right.
Yeah, that'd be kind of the cat crossing.
Exactly. And, you know, we do have openings in the wall where we have to allow rain through during monsoon season and things like this. And, and these cats have been using those openings as well.
I have only about a minute, but we need to talk about Ukraine. It seems like things are bogging down over there. Your thoughts quickly.
We have seen some quite a bit of success with Ukraine, but, you know, the Russian forces were given a lot of time to prepare a complex defense with minefields, trenches, other obstacles, and it is not going to come easy to push them out of the territory of Ukraine. This is going to be a long situation. I think the people of Ukraine are completely right in defending themselves, and we need to do everything we can to continue to support them.
But if the United States doesn't support them with arms, they're in trouble, right?
I think that they would be in trouble. Obviously, the European countries are continuing to support them, but they're doing so with the urging and lead of the United States. So if we backed out, I think it would only have a really bad effect on the people of Ukraine.
All right, General Jeffrey Buchanan, Lieutenant General Buchanan, always a pleasure to see you. Thank you very much for what you do.
Thanks, Bill, and I look forward to our next discussion.
Thank you very much. All right, that's going to wrap it up for the Buckmaster Show. On the behalf of General Buchanan and Tom on the other side of the glass, Bill Buckmaster saying thanks for being with us. Hope you're with us in about 23 hours. Our guest tomorrow, the Friday Focus interview, Pima County Attorney Laura Conover. Be well, everybody.